This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A few years ago, the Orange County Partnership for Young Children thought they were launching a program aimed at childhood obesity. Along the way, they got a big surprise. They received a grant to open some community gardens for low-income families. The intent was to get kids involved in productive exercise and teach them about nutrition. But the organizers hadn't expected that the majority of families who would sign up were some of Orange County's newest arrivals, Karen refugees from Myanmar, also known as Burma. Now, those refugee families have 4 acres of land they call Transplanting Traditions Community Farm. They recently launched a successful online campaign, and now they have enough money to continue operating when a federal grant runs out this fall. And those farmers have opened their own weekly farmers market in Carrboro. Here to tell us more about the farm and the community that tends it are the project's manager, Kelly Owensby, Etta Pui, who is an organizer of the Karen community in North Carolina and serves as translator and cultural liaison for the farm, and Leanne Hammerbacher, who's an associate director for stewardship and planning at the Triangle Land Conservancy. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank
you.
Kelly, tell us about the history of this farm.
Well, as you said, it did start with 3 community gardens that the Orange County Partnership for Young Children opened in 2007. And those community gardens are still running, and they're kind of like a small version of the farm. So we had low-income families who participated in programming at those gardens. It was free to all of our families. And we did nutrition education, cooking education. We had families growing with their children in a plot in the community garden. And that's when we got introduced to the Karen refugee community, because our families were majority Latino families as well as Karen refugee families. And when I was working with that program, I found that many of our Karen refugee families were always asking us for more space. They said, "This isn't enough space. Can we, we're looking over there at the rest of the area around the parking lot, can we start growing some loofah gourds there?" And I would say, "No, but maybe we can find some more space for you all." And I found out that they were farmers in Burma. And that's when we came across the grant from the Office of Refugee Resettlement and received that in 2010. And in 2010, we moved out to the Triangle Land Conservancy's Urban Nature Preserve and started the Transplanting Traditions Community Farm. We started with 14 refugee families. So the project grew out of a small community gardening project and then got a lot bigger in a couple years.
Etta Pui, let me ask you about farming in Burma and what kind of work you were doing. And the refugees who are now here in Carrboro, did most of them come from farming backgrounds? And how important was farming to you when you were back there?
Most of them are refugees from Burma. Here you can see that Karen families, they are the farmer in Burma. They have paddy fields. They have big gardens to grow varieties of crops. So they don't have other job like working in factory industry like that. But they totally depend their life, their careers on selling vegetables and fruits, and also selling rice that they grow in the paddy fields.
Yeah, so it's a big change when you come here and work in jobs that are not of farming or gardening, and you find yourselves working perhaps at UNC, doing housework or other kinds of work that keeps you inside. Very big change, I guess, from what you were used to.
Yeah, sure. So most of them, they said that before we didn't have experiences like working under the constructions. Like I work in, say, UNC or food service or salad bar or hotel, all those things they have never heard about before when they live in Burma. Even though we are refugee here, we came from Burma, we are not in the city. People, we are not living in the big city. We are not even living in the small town. We live in a small village that is not much developed.
Yeah. So that leads to the question, Kelly, if not only was the Karen community encouraging you to find more land, but maybe they wanted to grow the vegetables they were growing back there, perhaps not what you had in mind.
Yeah, so that was really exciting to me. I love agriculture and I love plants. So when we first started You know, I brought a seed catalog that I found from Thailand, and we all sat down and I said, show me what you want me to order so we can start growing. And it was really exciting, kind of one of our first exciting times as a group where everybody was, you know, waving their hands and pointing at different crops. And we ordered a lot of seeds and started growing a lot of really interesting crops that are native to Southeast Asia. We grow probably over 30 different vegetables and fruits and herbs.
How did the red clay of North Carolina take to those seeds?
Well, they actually do pretty well. I mean, of course, North Carolina is not a tropical climate, but we do.
Getting there.
Yeah, and it definitely starts to feel that way and in the summer. Yeah. And, you know, as you said, if temperatures are rising, we might end up being a perfect place for growing more Southeast Asian vegetables. So there's certain things that we can't grow, certain perennial crops, but we definitely grow very successfully and in large abundance, many, many interesting crops that families grew in Burma.
So, Mr. Pui, let me ask you, is the goal then to become self-sufficient as farmers with this, with the garden now and with the farm that you now have?
Could you please repeat the questions again?
Is the goal now to feed yourselves and to use the produce from this farm to become, to grow as much food as you need?
Yeah, the goals for the families right now is that all of them, they ask for a bigger land. They say that is just only 4 acres. That is not enough for 35 families. They can grow and they can take care of the 4 acres for one family. So they demand that the lands, everything from Kelly, and also they told me and an interpreter to tell Kelly that why not, we have a lot of space there, so why not we get a bigger land, at least 1 acre for each family. So I said that, okay, please wait and then we talk there.
Well, and what you did first was talk with Leanne and the folks at the Triangle Land Conservancy to get the 4 acres that you have now. Tell us about that land and how that transfer came about, the conversation that led to it.
Well, this 4 acres is actually part of a larger 270-acre farm we own just outside of Carrboro. Most of that farm tract is forested. Only about 40 acres of it were traditionally in agriculture. We received the farm as a bequest in 2007, so it was outright given to TLC. Triangle Land Conservancy, or TLC, works to protect open space in the Triangle, and we've protected about 15,000 acres and own about 4,000 of that, and work with different people on projects on our owned properties. The Irvin Farm was traditionally in agriculture, and we were looking for a way to sustain it in sustainable agriculture. And we had talked to several different partners and raised some funding and grants to put infrastructure in the ground, fences, processing sheds, a passive solar greenhouse, and had worked with various partners. But then in 2010-11 is when we started talking to Kelly and the Transplanting Traditions Group, and they just seemed like the perfect partner. We really wanted the Irvin Farm to serve as an incubator for education and research. When it was left to TLC as a bequest, the landowner really specifically wanted for agricultural education. So this was just a perfect match.
Yeah, when you think about that, Kelly, it's interesting. You've got this land that the Land Conservancy has. There's a growing interest in agriculture, but to actually get a farm like that up and running from what is basically an urban population would be a long sell if you didn't have refugees who suddenly come to you with all the skills you need and in abundance. Pretty good numbers, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a perfect match. You know, agriculture is still, you know, small farms are still waning in North Carolina. We lose small farms, you know, every year. But we have this population that's coming in that has this extremely long history of farming, has an amazing amount of agricultural skills. You know, so what we are looking to do is figure out sort of how to translate those skills so that they can work in North Carolina. Of course, farming in Burma, as in a tropical country, is very different. Marketing in North Carolina, business skills here in North Carolina are very different from what families are used to in Burma. But we do have a population that loves farming and has a strong cultural heritage of farming and wants to farm. That's one of the most incredible things that I see daily at the farm, is how much families love being there and how much time they spend there on top of their 40-hour-a-week jobs.
Well, you talk about that, Mr. Pui, because people are working 40 hours a week, and then I suspect they leave their jobs and come directly to the farm. That's a long day for people. That's a lot of hard work. How do they feel about working at a farm after leaving their job?
We Karen's families as a society, the community, they want to unite together. Even though they are so tired with their full-time job, so after they get out of the job, they remember that, oh, I still have a farm at the farm that I have to go there to see my growing vegetables, also to pick out the vegetable, to take care, to do weedings, to do watering, and then to get vegetables to bring home and eat with the families, also to share the extra with others, and also to see other families coming together, sharing experiences, sharing problems, sharing about job availabilities, sharing about the children's experiences, educations. So even though they are so tired from their full-time job, they feel so happy when they get out of the job and go into the farm, yes.
Not only are you keeping the community together and sharing all of these experiences, but there's also something about the food. I understand that making the adjustment to American food was pretty difficult for many of the people who came from Myanmar.
Yes, this is very difficult for especially the Korean families to eat American food. But little by little, they need to adjust. So right now, they grow partly they grow our traditional foods, and also they grow American vegetables so that they can learn how to cook, how to prepare recipes and cook at home as the American food. Also, they learn how to teach some other American family how to prepare our traditions, fruits and vegetables, how to cook and eat.
And Kelly, I understand that it's not only the vegetables themselves, that they might be different from what you were used to, but the way we process food here and the way you buy it in supermarkets, that was also a bit of a culture shock.
Yeah, that's something that I see just from observation, is that families, it's very important for them to grow their own food, to cook with fresh ingredients. But also, you know, they go to a grocery store and they have money to spend at a grocery store. And of course, processed food is often very cheap. So I see this interesting mix of families eating a lot of cheap, possibly unhealthy processed food, but also having this tradition of eating very healthy, fresh vegetables. And it's also a very important thing to people. I hear that over and over again. Fresh vegetables, free of chemicals, very important to the community. So I think it's very confusing. We've done a couple of little nutrition educational workshops, talking about the nutrition label, which is confusing to all of us. But if you can imagine having never really been to a huge supermarket, and all of a sudden you walk in and there's so many options, so confusing. I mean, eating has become a very complex thing. And I think that's extremely difficult if you are displaced from a very different culture.
Well, and you come to the very rational decision, even if you can't understand fully what's on the label, you taste some of that processed food, and clearly there's something wrong with it, although it's cheaper. So
yeah.
Without an alternative, you know, there wouldn't be much else to do. The choice would be made for you at the cash register. But now here's an option to go with your taste.
Exactly.
To say, you know what, this stuff didn't taste quite right to begin with. And that's a good judgment.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Very, very, very true.
But if there's no option to make your own food, you don't have it. So now tell me about this, the farmer's market. That's a way of marketing. Give us the evolution of the Karen presence at the farmer's market.
Okay. So we actually started with a CSA, which Community Supported Agriculture Vegetable Subscription Program, last year. We had 14 farmers participate, 26 members. We're repeating it again this year. And we had some families who decided they couldn't do it this year. And we do a lot of interviews and check-ins with families, a lot of meetings, really trying to understand what are the barriers to families meeting their goals of becoming farmers. And we found that a lot of our farmers said, you know, my job changes constantly. I don't have control of my schedule, or I'm taking care of a sick parent, or, you know, a lot of different things that keep them from being able to commit to one of our weekly farmers markets. So we thought, how about if we start our own farmers market and set our own rules? And that's what we have done. And we actually got a grant from the Resourceful Communities Foundation back in May. And that is helping us kickstart this farmers market. And it's also really helping us to accept SNAP, which was formerly food stamps at the market, which we're very excited about. We have a large percentage of our farmers who are on SNAP. A lot of families, to make ends meet when they first come to the United States, do receive SNAP. And we really want to be able to get our these culturally appropriate native vegetables into the Kern community and also make it affordable. So we're really excited about being able to accept SNAP at this market.
Who all is going to the farmers market?
Well, we just had our first one. So we'll have a mix of Kern customers, as well as we had a lot of American customers who are really interested in, you know, buying pennywort and learning how to cook with it, or, you know, gourds. And we also sell traditional American vegetables as well. So it's a really interesting mix of people who are very interested in adventuresome cooking and eating, but as well as, you know, Kern customers who really want to have fresh vegetables. It's hard to get them. The closest grocery store is mostly in Durham. There's an Asian grocery store there. So it's a mix of customers.
Where and when is the farmers market?
The farmers market is on Fridays from 5 to 7 at the Johnny's store, which is on 901 West Main Street in Carrboro.
So, Mr. Pui, tell me about some vegetables that you grow in Burma and are now growing at the farm that I might not ever have tasted, but you think I really should.
Yes, the vegetables that we mostly grow in Burma, like here, border gourd, pennywort, roselle, and snake gourd.
Wow, so you brought the bottle gourd with you, and snake gourd is another one.
Yes.
Now, are these bitter gourds? How do I cook these?
Okay, for bitter gourd is not only good for taste, but also good for your health.
Mm.
So for the bitter gourd to cook it, so you can cook it different ways. Yeah, you can make a soup. The taste will be a little bitter, but it's good for your organisms, especially when your spleen swelling. When your spleen swelling, and then you drink the juice of the bitter gourd, or you cook a bitter gourd and as a soup, and then you eat, and then it will cure your spleen swelling. And also, like the leaves, you can eat it fresh. Also, you can cure the malaria or the high fever.
Wow.
When you take a bunch of bitter gourd leaves, squeezes, and then you can get a juice. And then you can put it on apply it at your head, or you can drink it and then make the fever go down.
Well, I've got to get to this farmer's market. It sounds great. Kelly, it seems there are so many benefits to this. Not only is the Kern community able to hold itself together and reinforce the values of its community, but then we get to share in all of these great food products that we might not have known had they not come and shared their techniques and their craft with us.
Yeah, this project is infinitely fascinating to me. I think if someone had asked me my dream job, I would have said something like this, but then this would have actually exceeded my expectations. And, you know, one reason for that is that I love to cook and I love to eat, and I'm very interested in trying new things. And that's been a really fun part of the project for me, is being introduced to new foods, things that grow really well here. I mean, we don't have as many issues with certain diseases or pests on some of these tropical plants that we're growing. They just seem to be a little bit more successful. I don't know if that's because they're not, you know, they don't normally grow here, and that our diseases and pests are like, I don't even know what this is. I'm not exactly sure why, but, you know, they grow really successfully. And I think it opens up a lot of interesting doors for new foods for us to eat. And then I have been learning how to cook Kern cuisine, and I've been really lucky to get to taste a lot of different food, and it's really, really good.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Kelly Owensby runs Transplanting Traditions Community Farm. Etta Pui is the organizer of the Kern Community of North Carolina. He serves as translator and cultural liaison for the farm. Leanne Hammerbacher is an associate director for stewardship and planning at the Triangle Land Conservancy. You can explore Transplanting Traditions Farm at their open house tomorrow evening from 6 to 8. More information at our website, stateofthings.org. Up next, the North Carolina Symphony presents a sci-fi spectacular. Stay tuned.